This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. How are you this Saturday after election time? Well, surprising to some, surprising to many. Who knows? I'll tell you what, this show is going to be about, a little bit about the election, some thoughts I have on that. I'm not going to go too far into that. You've heard a lot of that on the regular media, and my job is to bring you stuff you haven't heard, make you think about things you haven't thought about. And I'm going to go over about 10 matters that with Obama's reelection you can pretty much count on. And you know, I'm not going to play it from the standpoint of my personal feelings. I mean, those of you who have been listening to me for a year or two know that I believe everything he does not do. His acts and lack of acts are intentional, part of a plan on purpose. Others, of course, that I've had on the show, including number one national best-selling authors of New York Times best-selling books, think differently. They just think he's inexperienced or incompetent. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to approach this show and these 10 matters that I think you can pretty much bank on, and which, as a matter of fact, in terms of your personal investments, your house, your life, where you put your money, and what you can expect over the next 4 years, you better bank on. And I'm going to take it from the standpoint that what some of the pundits are saying, Mr. Obama wants to create a legacy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are all true. I'm going to approach these as if, you know, he was true blue, absolutely for the USA, for the Constitution, for the good and security of the American people. I'm going to approach it from that standpoint. And I'm going to go over these matters with you because, you know, the die is cast. Some of these, I think the die would have been cast if Romney was elected. Anyway, let's get started, shall we? This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side, KGAB AM 650, Cheyenne and the Town Square Network, serving the Intermountain West. Welcome, Eastern Nebraska. Actually, Western Nebraska, excuse me. My compasses are screwed up here after the election. Western Nebraska, Southern Montana, Wyoming, Northern Colorado, and parts of Utah. And KFEZ FM, Colorado Springs, La Junta, Pueblo, Walsenburg, and all you great folks down in Southern Colorado. I guess I've gotten a few emails, some comments on our new website, www.ontherightsideradio.com, has all the archives. I'll be referring to them. And I guess there's some people in northern New Mexico that get KFEZ, too, maybe on certain days, if the sun flares are not interfering. Anyway, let's talk about the election. Then we'll get into these 10 really critical matters, problems that face America, and what you might expect over the next 4 years given the election results. You know, number one, I think the election, well, number one, there was fraud. You know, there was a number of instances in Ohio, North Carolina, Florida, where these electronic voting booths, I have never been a big fan of those. I've done several portions of shows on them in the past, and I believe I've mentioned that the largest American company that counts these votes, kind of maintains the machines, was sold to a Spanish company who, beginning in 2014, will tabulate 7% of all electronic votes cast in America. Nobody seems to know who owns this Spanish company due to Spanish law. I wonder. Anyway, my thoughts on voting machines, there were several instances in Marion County, Ohio, several counties in North Carolina, one county in Florida, and in most cases, people would try and register a vote for Romney, and it would come up Obama. And several people, I mean, tried two or three times. In fact, several of the machines were removed. And then down in Florida, there were machines that you tried to vote for Obama, and it would come up Romney. You know, I'm a simple guy. I'm just a rancher guy, right? Rancher and an author, simple life. I don't think electronic voting machines should be used, period. There is nothing wrong with a good old paper ballots. You know, where I voted early, but, and it's a small town, obviously, but you walk into the county clerk and recorder, and you're handed a kind of legal-sized sheet of stiff paper. Both sides have ballot questions. The front side is candidates. The back side is whatever's going on in your particular state, constitutional amendments, initiatives, you name it, bond issues. And, you know, you sit there and you color in the little oblong circles with your black pen or your pencil, and then you walk over to a machine, and you yourself, nobody else touching it, slides into the machine. The machine counts the vote. It doesn't count how you voted, but it says you're a voter, in my case, number 248. So you know it's been done. You know it hasn't been tampered with. And, you know, how difficult is this to tabulate? I believe that those earmarked, shall we say, you know, those round deals that you fill in are kind of counted by computer, but there's a paper record. So you can always go back and see what's right and see what's wrong. And, you know, the county clerk and recorder and the election officials can do checks on it. I think that's a good thing. I don't think these electronic machines are worth a hoot. I don't trust them at all. I never have. And given what happened in this election, given certain election places in key swing states, I might add, who were using software for the first time they had never tested, having a foreign company count 7% of the U.S. electronic vote? No, I just don't think that's a good idea. And, you know, there's another thing that kind of struck me on this election. I think this election solidified what began in 2008. The demographics of this country are changing. We can get into long discussions about why and how it's been engineered and the Immigration Act of 1965 that the Democrats were behind and whose motive is whose. Forget all that. The bottom line is demographics have changed. They've changed in terms of the amount of younger people, you know, under 30-somethings, the 20-somethings. They've changed in terms of the amount of Hispanic vote. And they've changed with this particular president in the amount of involvement by black voters. And I think when you start putting all that together, and then you throw in to the mix those people of any color, creed, or religion who are more concerned with getting a check today than what's going to happen with their children tomorrow, and you have exactly what happened in this election, and that is about a 50-50 split. You know, one of the things which astounded me in this election, because I really think it was a key election. We'll be talking more about that. There were 3 million fewer Republican votes cast in this election, even though there were record-setting Republican voting in several counties in key swing states, Ohio, Iowa, etc. That astounds me, I must say. And what really astounds me is that there were 12 million fewer voters in 2012 than there were in 2008. What's the deal? I mean, this is kind of a, since we get all our rights from God, pursuant to the Constitution, you know, the Creator has endowed us, whatever your God may be, or may not be, why wouldn't we exercise that God-given right? It really confounds me. The other thing that I notice in this election is, you know, in many of these key areas, the vote literally separating Obama and Romney, and in some cases some Senate races, and in a number of congressional races, some of which are still being counted, believe it or not, was less than 1%. And did you know that Gary Fellow, former governor of New Mexico who ran as a Libertarian, he pretty much pulled consistently in virtually all states and nationally about 1% of the vote? Interesting. Very interesting. I'm sure he took some votes from Obama, but I think he took more votes from Romney. And then the last thing that I guess I'm going to mention is I think that the storm played a role. You know, Sandy was a horrible event for many. and the ineffectiveness of the federal government in terms of anything, including cleanup, once the photo ops are done, is on display back east. It's been almost 2 weeks now. There's still almost a million people without power. There's, last report, 40,000 people without a roof over their head, at least. I mean, that's who they can count. And we can go on and on and on. And, you know, in this last little storm that rolled through a few days ago, that nor'easter, the FEMA shut down a number of its mobile offices, and the signs on the door, I'm not making this up, you couldn't make this up, said, closed due to weather. Well, I mean, okay. Gee, I thought that's what you were there for. Anyway, I think that that storm, and more than the storm, the great big and completely unnecessary, overly lavish bear hug that Chris Christie, the keynote speaker at the Republican convention, gave to President Obama, and the photo ops showing quote-unquote bipartisanship from a gentleman, Mr. Obama, who hasn't been bipartisan whatsoever in 4 years. I mean, his comment at the beginning of his term when the Republicans came to him and said, let's work together, was, elections have consequences, and I won. That's just not bipartisan. And his edicts to Harry Reid, which is to shelve everything coming out of the House, I think over 40 bills, 11 of which were passed with bipartisan support. I've talked about this on previous shows. That is 400 or more votes in the House, a whole lot of Democrats. Harry Reid just shelving those, including three budgets, so we haven't had a budget in 3 years, I don't think is bipartisan. So, you know, the timing was amazing, really. And Christie could have easily have thanked the president, been a gentleman, said thank you for coming down here and, you know, thank you for whatever assistance the feds can send our way and et cetera. But to go on a number of stations, I'm sure you guys saw him talking about effusively, ebulliently, how, you know, wonderful the president was and what a great job he's doing and all the, I mean, this is like the second day of the storm. Well, now, you know, now it's been 2 weeks and the federal government isn't getting squat done. Gee, imagine that. Photo ops over, president has been back, and nothing's getting done. So, Chris, Mr. Christie, what were you thinking? Just what were you thinking? You know, exit polls show that 42% of the people who voted in this past election actually weighed as a factor Obama's quote-unquote performance in the storm. Now, his performance was limited to the day after. After that, he was on the campaign trail. But, you know, it made an impact. Who knows how much? And it was unnecessary. Mr. Christie could have been a complete gentleman without, shall we say, kissing the president's butt in public. So, those are my feelings on the election. A lot of different factors, I think, weighed in. And I think one of the key factors, and the last one I'll talk about, and if you go back in the archives, www.ontherightsideradio.com, and you can leave comments there the way we have the website set up now. I hope you do. You'll see about 5-6 months ago, I did a show called The Corruption of America. And then I was followed by a show, the Corruption of Business in America. They're both really interesting. But The Corruption of the America show was really about the growth and entitlement mentality. Living for today and spending the future. Because, you know, there's not just redistribution going on between the United States and the rest of the world, and between various, shall we say, classes within the United States. But there's redistribution going on from the future to the present. I mean, all the government largesse, now almost $1 trillion in various type welfare and support payments, almost a third of the entire federal budget, which, by the way, is up from $10 billion. That was the total amount of those types of expenditures in 1970. Wow, 42 years from $10 billion to almost $1 trillion. And that $1 trillion is being borrowed from the future. It's being redistributed from our kids and our kids' kids to us. You know, we are playing this game for short-term gain and long-term pain. And I don't think it's right. And I think that vote was part of that too. Now let's talk about, should we say, the 10 things I think you can expect. And once again, I am really going to try and do this. Obviously, I have biases and I have opinions. And they're based on a lot of research and a lot of interviews, as those of you who have followed me over the years know. But I'm going to try and approach this as if President Obama was Mitt Romney. I mean, that's a tough comparison to make, but I really am going to try and tell you the way I think it's going to be if this president is serious about trying to help the middle class, trying to strengthen America, trying to make America a leader in the world, trying to be bipartisan, and trying to keep us safe. All the things he said in his acceptance speech, I'm going to take his acceptance speech, which was very much like what he said in 2008 and 2004, I'm going to take his acceptance speech at face value. I'm going to put away my bias, and I'm going to say, okay, everything he said in that speech was true. Everything he said, he meant. Everything he said he will do, he will do. And let's see where we come out on these major items. I'll be right back with those thoughts after a short break.
Land, for love and money. The beauty of the land provokes something primal. It fills us with awe and makes us yearn for land of our own. My land, those words evoke a sense of security and a place in the world. Yet the word land also evokes nitty-gritty financial issues, business, improvement, taxes, profit. In Volume 1 of Land for Love and Money, rancher Reed Lance Rosenthal uses his award-winning style to tell us real stories, the hard-hitting truth your banker forgot to tell you about all types, sizes, and locations of land. For those drawn to land purchase, ownership, management, preservation, and sale in good times and in bad. Reed's intense love of the land, his devotion to wild and remote places, and his extensive experience with land purchase and sale throughout two continents make him uniquely qualified to write Land for Love and Money. A bestseller already, Land for Love and Money is available at landforloveandmoney.com, Barnes & Noble, Hastings, Amazon, and fine bookstores everywhere.
This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio, KGAB AM 650 on your dial, Cheyenne and the Town Square Network, serving the Intermountain West, and KFEZ FM, serving southern Colorado and, I guess, portions of northern New Mexico. Anyway, we are going to talk about 10 things you can expect over the next 4 years. Once again, no bias, taking Obama at face value, forgetting everything I know about the guy, forgetting everything you've heard about him from me and others, forget it. Let's assume the speech he gave accepting his reelection was absolutely spot on and he meant every word of it. First of all, let's talk about taxes. Let's talk about finances and domestic matters first, and then we'll get into some international and world matters that you can probably rest assured are going to happen. Taxes are going to go up for everyone, period. Obamacare is now going to be the law of the land. It is highly, highly, highly unlikely it will ever be fully repealed. I think the government, in its meddling way, and it doesn't matter who's the president, will try and fix this and that as myriads of problems arise, and they will. And I think that Obamacare is here to stay. And on a personal level, you ought to get ready for that, because it's just math. There's going to be a doctor shortage. You're going to have to wait. Payments are going to be administered by the IPAP, which is right in the bill, Independent Payment Advisory Board. There's going to be $716 billion. It's right in the bill, taken from Medicare. There's going to be some tightness in Medicare for all you Medicare folks, and those of you who like Medicare Advantage, it's going to go away. And there's $675 billion, not me, this is the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, of new taxes in Obamacare. More than half will hit the middle class. Some of them, like an 8.5% rise in capital gains, will hit everybody if you sell property and don't take your one-time exclusion. I think you need to factor that into your property prices and when you sit down and noodle what you're going to have at the end of the closing. And I think buyers need to think about that, too, because it's going to be one of the byproducts of the inflation that we're going to be seeing, which I'll be talking about here in a moment. In addition, I think taxes are going to go up on a number of other levels. We've already seen increases in payroll taxes, which affects many of us, from about 38% to about 52%, give or take, in certain categories, obviously, not of your total paycheck. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen with this whole tax the rich theme and yada yada. The bottom line is that what you pay in taxes on many different levels, state, local, federal, is going to go up, and it's going to go up because of a number of different catalysts. So you're going to have less take-home pay. In addition, I really believe, and I don't think, you know, Romney might have gotten it reversed 3-4 years from now. I mean, you know, everything takes a long time. But I think that it's a good bet that at least for the next several years, 2 or 3, your real income is going to continue to decline. There's been a $4,300, give or take, a decrease in family income, family of four, over the last 4 years. I think you're going to see that increase. If you add in inflation, which is already cooked into the deal, folks, I mean, it doesn't matter who the president was. I think under Obama, we'll actually see lower interest rates for longer because the Fed, we've talked about this in previous shows, see the archives. I talked about QE3, what's happening when you print the dollar. When there's more dollars, you have inflation. Each dollar is worth less. And that's going to artificially hold interest rates low. That's going to accelerate the housing recovery in the short term, but there'll be a piper to be paid in the longer term. And by the longer term, I mean 2 or 3 years from now. So inflation is going to rise. If you go to realstats.com, I've talked about in previous shows, you know, it's put together. These are nonpartisan. They just use government indexes from 30 or 40 years ago before they started being manipulated. For instance, the Consumer Price Index includes fuel and food, which it does not include as published by the government now. Inflation is over 12%. That's real inflation. That's money right out of your pocket. In other words, if you have $100 in your pocket, it's going to buy $88 worth of goods from a year ago. So, inflation is going to continue because when you're printing money, when you're printing and spending, you have inflation. And once again, that's under any administration, at least for the next several years, but I think it will continue throughout the term of Mr. Obama. You know, I don't think there's going to be a budget again this year. We've seen Harry Reid posturing, and we've seen Speaker of the House posturing, and, you know, everybody's posturing. We have this fiscal cliff coming. You've heard about that. And for those of you who kind of screw your eyebrows up at, you know, what the hell is a fiscal cliff, it's real easy. It's kind of a combination of events. It's the taxes and the restrictions and business regulations in Obamacare, plus the expiration of, we'll call it the Bush tax cuts, on 12/31/2012, plus, on top of that, a decrease in government spending, including sequestration. I think you've heard about that. Once again, I'm not going to be biased in this. Mr. Obama, in one of the debates, said that the sequestration idea, which was if the joint committee between the House and the Senate, which the White House set up, did not get a budget done that had X amount of cuts, then automatically there'd be 500 billion, I'm rounding numbers, $500 billion taken out of domestic spending and $500 billion taken out of the military, which is in addition to the $450, $475 billion Obama has already cut or plans to cut from the military. So you got a decrease in government spending, which is going to increase unemployment and manufacturing and GDP, at the same time that you're raising taxes, which history has proven stifles investment, stifles new business formation, and stifles new employment. So that's the fiscal cliff that everybody's talking about they want to avoid. I think it's going to be partially avoided, and I think this would have been true perhaps under anyone, at least for the first year. It's going to be partially avoided with a series of Band-Aids. You're just not going to have a big fix. I hope I'm wrong on that, but I think it's something that you can kind of rely on. You know, all the major corporations, Fortune 1000 companies, send out reports, and I forget whether they're monthly or quarterly, but the last report, which was just two or three weeks ago and was buried by the media, was that they are projecting a 40% increase in layoffs. In fact, if you've been listening to the financial news, just this week, Boeing announced cutting over 10,000 jobs. Boeing, of course, is one of the country's largest defense contractors. Mr. Obama claimed that sequestration was not his idea. The Washington Post did a fact check both on Romney and Obama, and they both had their problems. But that sequestration thing was a for Pinocchio in the Washington Post, which, by the way, is hardly a conservative paper. The sequestration idea and the joint committee idea was all Obama. And several days later, he told the Des Moines, Iowa paper, the Des Moines Register, and you can look it up, you can Google this up, that even though he had said sequestration will never happen, that's a quote in the debate, and that it wasn't his idea, several days later he was in Des Moines and in an interview told them that sequestration will happen, and he thought it was a good idea. So I think that you're going to see massive cuts in military spending. That's going to have implications for us in national security. I think it's going to have implications for us in the international realm, which I'm going to talk about. But it's certainly going to have implications on our economy. I know you folks down in Colorado particularly, you know, you have some defense-based contractors down there. Be thinking about that. Let's talk about some of the other things that are going to affect us. Europe is in the tank. This was another story that was buried for the month going up to the election. I've been talking about this forever. I mean, more than a year. I was one of the first to bring this to everyone's attention. If you go back in the archives last fall of 2011, there's several shows. Greece is California. I talk about Europe. You name it. I don't know if you saw the riots on TV just in the last few days in Europe as these governments try to cut back on social spending, which their people become accustomed to. But, you know, unemployment in Greece is over 25%. Unemployment for under 30-year-olds in Greece is 58% and climbing. Think about that. The European Central Bank and the European Union had a meeting a week ago to try and fix their problems. They didn't get it done. That's one of the reasons the stock market dived after the presidential election, if you remember, it went down like 300 points the next day. The European Commission, which is kind of the executive arm of the EU, said that it expects the region's economic output to shrink 0.3% this year. Shrink. This spring, that same group said there'd be no change. For next year, the same commission predicted 0.4 growth. That is 0.4% growth. Now, we're jumping up and down here because we have an anemic recovery of about 1.3, 1.4% GDP growth over the last year if you average it. Think about 0.4%. That's barely above recession territory. For that same time period next year, The same group projected 1.3% growth. Obviously, things are not going well in Europe. That's going to affect us. It's our largest export market. One of the ideas that Romney had, this will be different, I think, in an Obama administration, was expanding exports to South America, a very, very, very fertile market, which, by the way, China is fully exploiting. I don't think that's going to happen. You know, more than four-fifths of the companies in the S&P 500 index, the 500 largest companies, they say that earnings are only up 2% over last year. Now, if we have an inflation rate of 12%, folks, and their earnings are up 2%, what's the net effect? The net effect is their real profits are down 10%. It's just math. And as we talked about, their layoff projections are up 40%. So I think all these things are going to come into play, and I think they would have come into play in one way, shape, or form, no matter who was elected. Now, it's a question of how this newly reelected president is going to tackle these massive problems which directly affect the United States. And, you know, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, just like I said, based on his own words there in his acceptance speech. Okay, coal companies, I don't think you want to go anywhere near them. Oil companies, I think that you will see increased regulatory burdens placed on the entire economy. There were rumors, I don't know if it's true, we'll have to wait and see, but based on what Mr. Obama has said, because he has never talked about loosening regulations, quite the contrary. I think you're going to see a spate of new regulations out of the EPA, which is going to affect private sector gas and oil production, which has been 100% of the tremendous energy growth we've seen in the last 2 or 3 years, which are fueling a number of states, and which could be fueling Colorado, which is certainly fueling, no pun intended, Wyoming and Montana and the Dakotas. I think you're going to see some dibble-dabbles by the federal government in that. And I think you're going to see continued investment, a lot of it poor investment, in quote-unquote unripe alternative energy companies and sources. Okay? We'll take Mr. Obama at his word and figure the crony capitalism will be gone, and his investments will be real investments in real companies, having nothing to do with who owns them and whether or not they contributed to his campaign. I'll take him at his word. But I think that you can pretty much rely on those matters. And I think because of that, and coupled with some international things, which we're about to get into, you know, you're going to see rising gas prices. That's not to say they're not going to dip from time to time based on this event or that event or whatever. But I think you're going to see $5 a gallon gas more or less as the norm, with certain deviations for season and refining capacities, by the end of next year. And once again, I'm taking Mr. Obama at his word. He does not like fossil fuels. He particularly dislikes coal. I don't think you'll see the Keystone Energy, the Keystone Pipeline built, which will unfortunately strengthen China, because they'll be taking that oil rather than us. And I think you can pretty much rely on that. And I think that's part of the inflation that we're talking about, although that's an actual rise in cost over and above inflation. Remember that 4 years ago, gas was an average of $1.86 a gallon, and now it is approximately $2, give or take, a gallon over that. I don't think you'll see any new refineries built, one of the things which could alleviate that increase in pricing. So, bottom line is, I think you're going to see about 1 million jobs lost in the next 12 to 18 months due to sequestration-type issues, cuts in defense, and the slowdown in Europe, the increase in inflation and the hiring practice of companies. You know, you've already heard stories concerning Obamacare, and we know Mr. Obama is going to continue forward with Obamacare. I mean, that's his own words. But many companies, for instance, like restaurants, are cutting their employees to 29 hours a week from 40 or more. And that's because 30 hours a week is the magic number at which you have to cover your employees under Obamacare. So, you know, you're already seeing a slowdown in employment and a slowdown in hiring. I can tell you in our little ranch company, I've taken certain steps, and everybody has. I mean, it's just part of business. You know, I think you're going to see Europe continue to decline. All this combined is going to create increased strain, and I think it would have under any presidency. It's a question of whether it continues or is alleviated. It's a question of whether cities and states are given the incentive to work their own way out of it, as Wisconsin has and Ohio has and other states have, or whether the federal government's going to step in and start writing checks, which increases our deficit, requires the printing of more money, the borrowing of more money, further mortgages our future. I mean, I don't know what the answer is to that. We'll take Mr. Obama at his word, and we'll say that the federal government's not going to step in. The bottom line is that there will be municipal bankruptcies and county bankruptcies on a wider scale. I did a show on this, too. This was last fall. The soft underbelly of American financial structure are municipalities and local governments. It's much more difficult for them to raise bond money, and many of them have worked themselves into a huge hole. You've all heard about the bankruptcies around the country in Pennsylvania, Alabama, particularly in California. Look for that to increase. And those of you who have pensions and such who are listening to this show around the country, govern yourself accordingly. In fact, based on all these prognostications, govern yourself accordingly. We're going to come back, and I'm going to talk about the world a little bit and some other issues that I think you can pretty much expect to continue. I think what I'm projecting here, and I hope that these are pessimistic projections. Once again, they're based on Mr. Obama's own words and the fact that his heart is completely in the right place based on his acceptance speech. So we'll be back in just a bit. We'll go over the international things and how that's going to affect us nationally also, because, you know, unfortunately, China sneezes, we catch cold. We stumble, Europe falls. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Be right back.
Critics rave about the Threads West and American Saga series, Reed Lance Rosenthal's number one bestseller. Comparing it to Lonesome Dove, to Centennial, and even to Gone with the Wind, the Threads West series begins in 1855 and unfolds the riveting, sensual, adventure-filled tale of a country on the cusp of greatness. Fueled with passion, each thrilling adventure-packed novel follows lives woven into multi-generational tapestries of lust, duplicity, enmity, love, and triumph. Threads West and Maps of Fate, both number one bestsellers, are available at Barnes & Noble, Hastings, Amazon.com, and BarnesandNoble.com. Read the romance of the West, the story of America, her people, and her spirit. Go to ThreadsWestSeries.com. That's ThreadsWestSeries.com. Get them both today.
Welcome back, listeners. All you folks in the Intermountain West, from Colorado to Montana and Nebraska to Utah. Listen, we're about to get into the international projection, shall we say, for the next 4 years. There's two things I want to add to the domestic projections. I think you're going to see maybe not a cap-and-trade bill, which would be very detrimental to the U.S. economy, jobs, you name it, but I think you are going to see some type of carbon tax enacted. I really believe, and you might have seen it under any presidency, but I believe that they will use the deficit as a crisis, and they will try and put in some type of carbon tax. You know, California's already done it. Europe has kind of a cap and trade thing, which is close. The North American discharges of quote-unquote pollutants fell 1.3% last year because of slowing economic growth. In China, who's the world's biggest emitter, greenhouse gases from fuel rose 9% in 2011, and this is with China starting to have a slowdown, which will also affect us internationally. So, you know, whatever we do here is more than offset by what they don't do over there, and we put ourselves at a competitive disadvantage. But I think you will see that. There's carbon trading programs in California, China, and Brazil. By the way, they're part of the BRIC group I've talked about, who wants to replace the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency of the world with actually the Chinese yuan. Gee, imagine that. They want to encourage U.S. lawmakers to introduce greenhouse gas trading by at least 2020. Well, I bet they do. They make money on the trades. They impact our economy, and they step into the vacuum. I mean, they are not our friends. Okay, in the European carbon market, which is the world's biggest, you know, in terms of traded volume, they dropped to a four-year low last April. Obviously, that's because of their economic problems, too. But a lot of Europeans are urging the United States to put in some type of carbon tax. And this, of course, would further affect fuel prices and employment and GDP. So be keeping that in mind. You're going to see something like that kind of arise over the next 4 years. Let's talk about international, which I've been threatening to do here for several minutes. All right. You know, I don't think you're going to see stability in the Middle East. I don't think under this president, once again, based on what he said, because he had a few kumbaya things that he said in his acceptance speech, I don't think you're going to see respect for the United States grow. And I think it's at an all-time low with the Benghazi matter. And the Benghazi matter, I think, is going to be, depending upon how the media handle it now that the election's over, I think it's going to be a pretty big deal. But more importantly, whatever it is on the domestic front, it has severely impacted our respect and standing with our enemies. And the Obama administration's refusal to acknowledge our enemies as Islamic radicals and to refuse to acknowledge terror, whether it's at Fort Hood, whether it's Christmas Bomber, or whether it's Benghazi, does not bode well for our security. That might be a key difference between Romney as a president and Obama as a president. But once again, I'm going on what Obama says, and that in his heart of hearts, he believes that the steps we're taking makes us safer and more secure. Okay, Russia. Russia will continue to flex its muscles. We will continue to step back. China. We will do absolutely nothing with China. There will be some, you know, photo ops that we did this little thing or that little thing on how they make dolls or, you know, the yuan was 1% undervalued, whatever. China will continue to kind of kick our butts. And there's projections that China's economy could overtake ours, even though they've slowed, by the year 2016. And if all these other things come true, that's going to happen. China is also expanding rapidly their military. And I think you're going to see, shall we say, conflicts or tension throughout Asia, Australia, Japan, as China expands its influence in its continual quest for global resources. I think you're going to see Israel attack Iran. In fact, I'm 99% sure of it. And, you know, if Obama is true to his word, we're going to stand behind them. We'll see. But Israel doesn't have much choice, and Obama's commitment – to continue negotiation is going to come to a point where that red line that Netanyahu drew on that little bomb drawing at his speech at the United Nations is going to be reached, and Israel's going to go, because they're not going to allow another Holocaust. They're not going to allow their country to be threatened. Now, Obama did not speak about this, but my opinion is that Iran is so dug in, so entrenched in their nuclear facilities underground, you name it, so reinforced in their bunkers, in their laboratories, that the only way Israel's going to be able to take them out is with tactical nuclear weapons. That, well, that's a scary prospect. But you know what's a scarier prospect? Iran having a nuclear bomb or a nuclear device, which they would be all too happy to sell or give. They'd probably give it for free to anybody who'd like to come across the sieve that will continue to be our borders and to place it in one of our cities. Anyway, I believe that you will see all that happen. Okay, in a few other little things, I think you're going to see another bailout of GM. Obama himself has said, you know, he's the savior of the car industry. Obviously, at least 50% of the country thought he was. But if you look at the fundamentals of GM, and if you go back three or four shows, I did a whole segment on GM with the actual facts and figures, you'll see that their operating costs, because the unions control 60% of the company, are not competitive with their competitors around the world. You'll see that their sales of their key models are in competitive sectors of the car economy, which have the most competition. You'll see that they still owe the United States taxpayer $25 billion. And I think you're going to see another bailout there, which once again will add to the deficit, add to our borrowing, increase the printing, and increase inflation, and borrow more from the future. Bottom line is, I think you're going to see our currency under attack, inflation continuing and rising, investment down, unemployment rising. You know, the last reports here this week, there was 355,000, I believe, jobless claims. Economists say that you need to have 375,000 or less jobless claims for at least 2 and preferably 4 years before you can say that employment has stabilized. There's only been 4 times in the last 4.5 years, which includes some of Bush's last time, there's only been 4 times that jobless claims in a week have fallen below 375,000. And one of the things I'd like you to think about is that we are in the Christmas season. This is the holiday season, and there's a lot of part-time people being employed now by stores and retail outlets and web-based retailers. And after Christmas, they're all going to be let go again. So you're seeing a temporary blip downwards in unemployment. Even then, it's 7.9%, as stated by the government, 10.7% in reality, 14.7% if you include the underemployed, and 19% if you include those who dropped out of the job market. Remember those unemployment figures in Greece, folks. It's not too far off. So I don't know whether this is bad news for you, this is good news for you, but I really do believe that this is what we will see over the next 4 years. You know, we might see a little bit more play to the bipartisan. We may see a few more things done. And, you know, that's assuming Obama is absolutely truthful in every word he's spoken, his acceptance speech. We'll see Band-Aids as we lurch from fiscal crisis to fiscal crisis. We're probably going to see another downgrade of our credit, which may have happened under any president. These are all things you kind of need to weigh in on. This is a damn good time to buy land. This is not a bad time to buy a house. But know that the better times, and I'm not going to call them good, but the improving times in housing are going to probably evaporate when the Fed stops printing money around 2015, and they will. So I will end this show by telling you five things. Number one, while you must have cash on hand, obviously, you want to make sure that your investments are in, shall we say, elements, you know, whether they're coins or whether they're land or what have you, that are inflationary hedges. I'm not an investment advisor. You talk to your people, talk to your CPA, but you definitely want to protect your U.S. dollars with inflation hedges. Number two, those of you who are in certain sectors of the economy, defense, energy, etc., banking, you know, USB just announced 10,000 layoffs around the globe, most of them in the United States. Careful of your jobs. You know, keep your ears to the track. You don't want to be out there kind of getting overcommitted and then finding out you got a layoff notice. And I hope that doesn't happen to a single person listening to this show. But, you know, eyes wide open. Number three, plan within your family budget for your taxes to go up. They're going to go up from a number of different catalysts, shall we say, from various different impetuses and needs of the federal, state, and local governments, and you're going to have less spending money at the end of the year. Number four, look for your cost of fuel and, in fact, just your daily living needs to go up. There's going to be continued and increasing inflation. Food is up 10 to 20% over the past 12 months. That's going to continue. Fuel, as we discussed, is up almost 200% in the last 4 years, and that's going to continue. All of this is going to make a dent in your ability to spend, you know, your discretionary spending. Look for the government to continue to spend. And look for the government not to be able to rein themselves in through any type of meaningful short or long-term budget. And that means that your kids will be impacted, as will their educations and your ability to pay for educations. Think about all these things. Okay? This is not a harangue at Obama. He was just elected. This is based on his speech. Listen to his acceptance speech. It's on the web. And I'm assuming that everything he says in there, he means. He really means it from the bottom of his heart. And I'm factoring in other things he has said and done over the last 4 years, and I'm saying that there's no ill intention, there's no plan, there's no sinister end intent. And I'm just saying he's going to do what he says. So, there you go. I'll use that phrase again. Eyes wide open. And remember Thomas Jefferson's words, prophetic. He said, "He who trades security for liberty shall wind up with neither." This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a great Saturday. I got some great interviews coming your way over the next several weeks. Don't miss them. I mean, they really, I'm pretty excited about them. The first one, which will be next week's show, is General Patrick Brady, one of the most decorated, high-ranking military officers in the Army. Wrote a book, Dead Men Flying, Victory in Vietnam. However, he's an expert on the current military situation. He's going to talk to us about what he thinks is going to happen with the military, the sequestration, budget cuts, ability to respond, you name it, and what he thinks ought to happen with the military. And that is next week's show. I'm very excited to have him on. And the show after that, I have another terrific interview. I'm really pleased that these people are coming on this show because I think it's, well, first of all, it's very exciting for me. I learn a bunch. and hopefully it's giving you insights, views, and discussion, or, you know, even though you're listeners, from people that you ordinarily wouldn't be able to listen to. And Brian Sussman, okay, Brian Sussman is a specialist on kind of green energy, shall we say. He wrote a book, Eco-Tyranny, How the Left's Green Agenda Will Dismantle America. Well, you can see where he's coming from, but he has some very interesting facts and figures on green energy, what's really going on behind it, how and why money is being spent on it, and what certain environmental groups who are big promoters of green energy really have planned within their own documents for the green energy movement in the United States. And that particularly affects us folks out here in the West. Because one of the things, I didn't talk about this, you're going to see more and more involvement by the United Nations in American affairs. And we've talked about Agenda 21. It's in the archives. You should definitely listen to that if you're a landowner or plan to be. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. KGAB AM 650 Cheyenne and the Town Square Network, serving the Intermountain West End, KFEZ FM, Southern Colorado. You guys have a great week.